to see your face. Pass me by the crowds of people, the priest who sing your praise. Hello, my name is Shane Eidelman, and I'm the pastor of Westside Christian Fellowship in Leona Valley, California. It is my personal heart and goal for you to see truth through a biblical perspective. I hope that you enjoy this segment of Eidelman Unplugged.
Well, you're thinking there, when it comes to the diet, though, would you say then, you know, the life-giving food, whole plant-based, even meat and dairy is controversial, but biblically speaking, you know, if it's clean. And then you've seen the studies. There are studies out there that show moderate clean meat consumption is good. But then you watch it, Forks Over Knives and one of these other documentaries. I'm just like, how do they get conflicting information? Are they looking at different things?
Okay. Yeah. They're making something that's simple, very complex. Okay. Right. The human body is very versatile. It's very adaptable. And if you study people's groups around the world, it has been done going back to the 30s and 40s. The dentist that went around.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, I forgot his name too, but I'm sure we'll both.
Yeah, but
I keep thinking of Herbert Shelton, but he was a fasting.
No, he was more fasting, but it'll come to me afterwards. But anyway, he went around and studied all these people's groups, and this is back in the 30s, published, I think, early 40s. Yeah. And his conclusion was the American diet is way too processed.
Right.
Okay, so all of these people had different diets. They had different lifestyles, but they didn't have our diseases. So we have people that have, they're more carnivore, and then there are people that are more herbivore. And then we have people that are kind of both, like, you know, like the Hansa people, the tribes over in Tanzania, and half the year they're more carny and the other herbs. And it's interesting. They're healthy. And
I remember one group he studied, their diet was mainly sweet potatoes and not much meat at all. And you would think, oh my goodness, you know, all these carbs, but they're also very active. I think we forget that too. You know,
right.
Not to interrupt, but I looked at my watch yesterday and I got in a full 1 mile of walking. I'm like,
really?
No, that's all. That's it for the whole thing.
Really?
I'm like, that's not good. I shoot for, you know, 10,000 steps, and it's just
right.
If you're not, you know, making it a priority, I think my point was a lot of these people were very active.
I try to look at it from the Lord's perspective. He gave us all of this food for health. He designed it for our body. And if we follow those guidelines, we usually don't have a problem. What did Jesus eat? Was he a vegetarian? No, he wasn't a vegetarian. I don't have anything against vegetarianism, but there's some little caveats. But Jesus ate meat, some lamb, some beef, not a lot. And I don't have a problem with the carnivore diet either, except not for the long haul.
Yeah, long haul, because it's Weston A. Price.
Yeah, that's it.
Weston A. Price. Yeah, his research was pretty incredible. John the Baptist, locust actually is 40-50% protein. I don't know if people know that. It's very good, high protein food.
Yeah, you ever tried it?
No, I don't. I don't think I will. But I think the World Economic Forum wants us to all start eating insects. So that's really the thing is. Moving more, and you're not carrying extra body weight. I mean, that is huge. And then when you mentioned the processed food, that's actually one of my questions, the truth about cholesterol, because with the refined oils, and you know, you've been, the big thing now is the, is it the APOB, you know, APOB, because the APOB is what brings the LDL, the bad cholesterol, which I don't think is bad. It brings that to the repair site. And it repairs the inflammation. And so it's getting blamed for all the problems, but they're not looking at what's causing that damage in the artery.
Cholesterol is not an evil molecule. It's one of the most important molecules in your body.
Every cell needs it. Yeah.
No, if you take in, you know, if you take in, you know, I don't know, 300 milligrams, your body is going to, of cholesterol, your body's going to manufacture another 800 from the liver.
Right.
And it's necessary for all your cell walls. It's necessary for all your steroid hormones. It's for your brain. And by the way, it's the transport.
It's what? So, the transport agent?
Transport. So that's the cholesterol that we talk about. It's not cholesterol. It's lipoproteins.
Right. Yes. So,
high density lipoproteins, low density lipoproteins. Yeah.
And the high density, just so people know, the high density is what brings the cholesterol back into the liver.
Right.
Where the LDL takes the cholesterol out into the bloodstream to repair. And that's
right.
Why it's called the bad cholesterol. And I never understood. I've actually checked my cholesterol once when fasting. It was high. I'm like, oh my goodness, why is my cholesterol so high when I'm fasting? Well, it's because the liver is already producing. So you have to wonder, all these diets, low fat, you know, instead of, you know, these cookies, crackers, all these, the low fat diet craze, getting rid of important monounsaturated, polyunsaturated, getting rid of all these fats. And then now putting in partially hydrogenated oils, aspartame, red dye 40 coloring, monosodium glutamate, and all these things that are not good for the body.
Sticky topic. And most of my colleagues are not going to agree with me on this, but somewhere in the 90s or something, I heard a lecture and they were talking about LDL, and it was up on the big screen, and they were talking about pattern A, large, fluffy, buoyant. Pattern B, hard, dense. And then I was really confused. And I go, oh my gosh, you know, well, they're both LDL. I thought LDL was all bad.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out that, you know, pattern A, a large, fluffy, buoyant, is driven by fat intake. Pattern B is driven by carb intake. Mm-hmm. Pattern B is the type that we find oxidized and in the arterial wall.
Okay.
We don't find the pattern A in the wall. So people are a little confused. Well, I heard that, and then I didn't hear anything more about it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, how can we never test for that if pattern B is bad? Why don't we look at that? Well, it turns out if we really did that, a lot of people wouldn't be put on statins. So there are genetic components to this. There are people that produce nothing but A for the most part. And then there's families that just produce B no matter what they do.
Just to bring in a point of clarification, the A is the, when you call it the tighter, more dense particle in the in the LDL, that's the one causing damage, where the fluffier B is the one that's not.
No, it's the opposite.
Opposite. Okay. Opposite.
Okay. The A is large, fluffy.
And
the B is small, hard, dense.
Okay.
So
we could break down those. That would be more advantageous to see exactly what type is in a person's bloodstream.
Right. And so, well, I was a little confused. Well, why haven't I heard anything more about this? But for instance, using an example of a patient that came into me, she says, well, I know you're going to want to put me on a statin because everyone wants to put me on. She's 35 years old. Her cholesterol is a little over 400 and her LDL was 256. And
that's up.
Yeah.
There.
So I said, well, I understand. So, tell me this, does anyone else in your family have high cholesterol? And she goes, everyone. I go, everyone? She goes, everyone. Next question, is there heart disease? She goes, not a soul. Extended family? No. So I said, well, we have to break down your cholesterol. Yeah. And so she comes back. I know I mentioned this to you before, the NMR lipoprofile.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah. So that's breaking it down into the particles. And so her LDL particle was somewhere around 2000, and that's a really high number, by the way. Yeah. That's very, very high. And of her pattern B was about 78. And the rest of all those were all A. Now, if you get below about, I think it's about 550 or something like that on your B, you're doing good. Anyway, she's at 78.
Wow.
Okay. Her average particle size for LDL, this is all comers, she was slammed up against the wall over here. I've never seen someone with a particle size that high. So it was all pattern A. So no wonder.
And just to clarify, because a lot of people, you know, they're not quite sure what we're talking about. The bottom line is, although she had high cholesterol, when you broke down the particle sizes, it was actually the type of cholesterol that's not binding to the artery walls. So she probably wouldn't. Yeah. That's why it doesn't, heart disease doesn't run in her family.
Yeah. And the other factor is that the LDL pattern B isn't really a problem until it gets oxidized.
And oxidize is when it is oxidative stress, when it's...
Well, oxidative stress, yeah, oxidation is rust. But if you have free radicals through your blood, that's going to oxidize. So, someone's smoking.
Bad food is free
radicals. Yeah. Deep fried foods. You can take a group of 10-year-olds and you can go to their classroom and you can do a little Doppler on their artery and check their blood flow. Yeah. And you break the group into twos where half are going to go out and eat,
Andy.
No, a big extra serving size of fries. Okay.
Okay.
Out of Wendy's or McDonald's, wherever. And the other group is just going to get the equivalent in the vegetable oil. And of those two, which one's going to have a change in their blood flow? Well, after 2 hours, you measure their Doppler and you're going to see the little, flow. Mm-hmm. And the group with the fries has dropped down about 30% or so in their blood flow. And the other group hasn't changed any. Okay, why? That's acute endothelial oxidative stress.
Of these oils from the fries.
Uh-huh. And so you're scouring your million miles of blood vessels with free radicals. Now, what does that do to the endothelial cells? Well, they can't release nitric oxide.
Right. And just so people know, the endothelial cells are the cells within the lining of the arteries.
Right. I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah. I'm just trying to bring it down to the...
Right. So the endothelial
level,
inside the arteries. And the endothelial cells, they release nitric oxide, which, that relaxes.
Good, muscle.
Nitric oxide is what's released with Viagra, okay?
Yeah.
It causes dilation of blood flow. So anyway...
I want to pause for a minute, because I think this is one of the most critical points you've made. With the French fries, different things, those chemicals, the way the carbohydrates are even produced... The sodium, it's not even normal sodium, the type, all of that now that's in your blood is basically, it reminds me of sandpaper kind of going through and damaging the artery walls. So I think it's important for people.
Right.
That's why bad food, where if you take a grass-fed buffalo with some avocado, that fat is just, it's more smooth and it's not causing the damage, the sandpaper against the artery walls. I mean, that is, I hope that gives people that vision.
That's a good analogy. Yeah. When you've got blood flowing through your arteries, lickety split, I mean, it's very fast flowing, and you've got to have smooth arteries. You have to have no defects. Otherwise you get flow imbalances. So anything happens where you get a ding in that wall, the body's going to try and repair itself.
Yeah.
And this is part of where the cholesterol and entering the picture. Cholesterol isn't the perpetrator of the crime. He's at the scene of the crime. You know, he might be a getaway. He's a getaway driver. But
I like that analogy, because everyone makes it the bad guy there, you know?
Yeah. And it looks like it's more of a part of a healing response. So the problem isn't cholesterol. It's well, how did we get there in the first place? And then you have the glycocalyx. I think that's what it's called. It's the coating on the inside of your arteries, and it's a protein in glyco, and you might have a sugar component, but
It's
like it's kind of like a film. So if you pick up a fish out of the water, what do you notice first?
Yeah, the slippery.
It's slimy. Okay, well, that slime enables that fish to go through the water.
Right.
Okay, that's what's lining all of your arteries.
Right.
Okay. And so, well, what can damage that? Okay, you know, the bad food. But if you have high sugar levels, especially diabetics, it thins out that glycocalyx. And that glycocalyx acts as a protection, a protecting factor. And if you thin that out or really get it down, you're much more apt to damage the arterial wall. So you end up having the little dings, nicks, right. maybe at the bifurcations.
Right.
So anyway, back to that whole picture with LDL and the fractions of that. If we were to look at what statins do, statins will lower both kinds, but they actually lower A more than B. And
we want that. Yeah.
Okay, well, the A is driven by fat, but we have been driven to believe that, okay, fat is what causes heart disease. Okay, so you know this, and I think I mentioned it in the book as well, and that was dealing with the seven country study.
Yep.
And, you know, I brought up that, you know, Menotti, who was one of the co-authors, the Italian, he went back in, I think it was 99, and he looked at their data. Well, they really hadn't looked at their carb data. They were so focused on proving that saturated fat was the causative factor that they never looked at their carb data. So 78, 99, okay, so 21 years later, he goes back and looks at their data and says, oh my gosh, small correlate with the fat, large correlate with the carbs. Okay, and so you never heard about that. The public didn't hear about that.
What would that mean to the common person that the carbs, too many carbs were driving?
Right. So, well, going back to, you know, the mid 60s, we started coming into this idea and they were debating it and they didn't know which way it was going to go. Is it the carbs or is it the fat? And there were people that had the idea was the carbs, but Ansel Keys, who was behind that study, he firmly believed it was all about the fat, and the saturated fat caused it. So he set that study up, and I looked at the study, and I looked at some data prior to the study, and I know that he kind of cherry picked the countries. Yeah. He eliminated two of the countries in Europe that had the highest consumption of saturated fat.
Mm-hmm.
They also had the lowest incidence of heart disease.
Yeah.
France, and even the French smoked more than the rest of Europe.
Right.
But they had the lowest heart disease.
Right.
And the highest saturated fat, and Germany was a follow-up to that.
Because we mentioned antioxidants. Oh, I'm sorry. Do you have a closing point on that one?
Well. Anyway, the sugar council. They paid a lot of money. They buried the
evidence.
The guy that had the study over in the UK. Showing just the opposite, and everyone went along with this mantra that, you know, saturated fat is bad and it causes heart disease, and there you go. But at the same time, we knew about the Eskimos and their 80% fat intake, saturated fat on top of that, whale blubber, seal blubber, and they have no heart disease. And they don't have stroke risk. Well, they have minimal thromboembolic stroke risk. Ours is over 700% above theirs. And heart disease, it really doesn't exist. But if you take them off the tundra and you feed them our diet.
Here it comes, yeah.
Yeah, and within 10 years, they're having heart attacks and strokes.
So if I went back to that, the best diet that we initially started to talk about, it would say, obviously, what works for a person, but enough whole plant-based food, you know, the veggies and the fruit, you know, in moderation, of course, but also to possibly bring in some clean meat, a little bit of clean dairy, and then get more active. Basically, good food in moderation and more activity.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. I don't tell my patients. I always tell them, look, I'm not telling you to eat like an Eskimo.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You don't have to do that. But I will tell them the culprit isn't what they make them out to be. The fat isn't the problem. Now, there are good fats and bad fats.
Right.
And no, you don't need so much saturated fat. And not all saturated fat is the same. But I try to get a moderation. So, okay, the meat, the vegetables, the fruits, the nuts, the seeds, I try to get a balance. I'm pretty much more of a Mediterranean type, except I don't hold to the Mediterranean diet that most Americans think is a Mediterranean diet.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at whole foods. I'm looking at the foods. They're not processed food. They're not made up food. I'm trying to get as much natural whole food as I can.
Right.
But everything's in balance. And
that's the key.
Yeah. And as I mentioned, man is very, very versatile. They can adapt and like the sweet potatoes.
And you mentioned earlier the, so people know free radicals are, they're basically, they're missing, was it a proton or something? And so they're balanced.
It's an electron unpaired.
Electron, yeah, unpaired. And so they're bouncing around and we've got all these free radicals. And what you mentioned is that this type of diet is actually very high in antioxidants. So the antioxidants give that free radical, they help balance out that, it's not a free radical anymore. It becomes very stable. And so all this food that we're eating, the Doritos and the Dr. Pepper and the even bread, just normal bread, crackers, cookies. I mean, just about 90% of what we're eating is processed food, which is delivering even more free radicals into the body. And so we can easily see.
Right.
You know.
Right. Yeah. And if I can take a step back, you know, to the mid 60s when this debate was going on, they started telling people fat was bad. Okay, so fat was dropped out at your little pie graph, proteins, fats, carbs. The fats were shrunk, so the vacuum was filled in immediately with carbs. And you can plot it out. You can see the diabetes going up and the heart disease going up and hypertension was part of heart disease. You start seeing the cancer go up. You start seeing everything go up, including Alzheimer's dementia.
Yeah.
Which is related to its type 3 diabetes, insulin resistance.
Right, absolutely.
That's not the cause of Alzheimer's. It's one of the big factors that feeds the whole thing. But the diet kept changing, and we thought, it was going to be better, but it never stopped. Even when they brought to the attention, I remember in 2002, they came out with the International Congress of Diabetologists. They said, wow, if we don't do something, the kids born this year, by the time they reach adulthood, we're going to have huge numbers, up to, 30, 40, 50% are going to be diabetic. Well, those kids from 2002, now they've reached adulthood.
Yep.
Okay, and guess what? Now we're looking at, easily 50, 52% of the U.S. population is diabetic or pre-diabetic.
Right.
And they say, well, pre-diabetes isn't diabetes. Well, I beg to differ. It is.
It shows all the signs.
We didn't know when we determined, say a hemoglobin A1C of 6.5 is, that's the number right there. That's when you become a diabetic, and we'll give you your certificate there. But the pathology starts back at pre-diabetes, 5.7 to 6.4. And the prime driver of coronary artery disease happens to be insulin resistance.
Yep, amen. So true.
The APOE4 gene that is driving Alzheimer's, it also drives coronary artery disease. It's linked with that. Well, both of them have in common insulin resistance.
Talk a little bit about fasting and replacement therapy, hormone replacement therapy. And it might be good to mention too that your the type of practice you do, you don't take on new clients because I can imagine, you know, people after hearing this are wanting to get in touch with you, but I think you're more dealing with specialty type issues now, correct?
I don't have an open practice.
Okay.
And no, I'm happy to I'm happy to do this, and I'm happy.
Right. That's
to
what I'm saying. Yeah, this should help. And a lot of people, because I help a lot of people with health and nutrition too. Obviously, not knowing as much as a doctor, I'm kind of know a lot about a lot of different things. If they can begin eating healthy, moderation, cutting out sugar, even intermittent fasting, getting active, and start to really take care of the body, a lot of their issues. That's the core of it. I think a lot of us know that, but we want that pill. If I can just take that pill, then I can enjoy, you know, all these other things.
Right. And that's what we've kind of been indoctrinated, in the sense that, the answer to everything medically is pill. And yet that's a paradigm I try to get my patients to break, because that's not real at all. We were the whole pharmaceutical industry isn't interested in any of this,
right?
There's so much money invested in the food industry and the pharmaceutical industry. The doctors out there, rank and file, are never going to receive any of this. They're not going to hear this,
right?
Is it being taught in the medical schools? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. There's a few exceptions, but to this degree, no.
And there's a lot of people waking up, you know, Peter Attia, Dr. I think it's Paul Saladino, you know, of course, yourself, a lot of the videos, Ben Greenfield, Gary Brecka, Huberman, his podcast. And, you know, it's getting the message out there for sure.
There are tens of thousands of us out there.
Yeah.
Integrative functional medicine doctors and people, naturopaths and other practitioners of health, and some of whom you just mentioned. You have other people.
Many others,
PhD researchers that are bringing this stuff out, Walter Longo, bringing some of this stuff out. But for the most part, we've been sold this idea about drugs, and drugs are the answer. And here, this whole thing, this was the beauty of fasting, was this is engineered into your body to do this. And people say, well, how can you say that? Well, I happen to know it was engineered, but the whole thing, for instance, autophagy, okay. Now, what does autophagy do? It optimizes your cellular function. It cleans the house. It gets rid of oxidized, broken parts, cleans the place out, brings your energy levels up inside the cell. It optimizes functionality. Okay, and then it's going to clean out with mitophagy, it cleans out your weak, sick, oxidized, broken, you know, leaking mitochondria. Need to be taken out, and that leaves room so we can restore them. Okay, and that's where the exercise comes in, and we stir up mitochondrial replication. But if we don't have that mitochondria in that cellular house cleaning, that never happens. And so people live inside this vehicle of theirs for how many years, and they've never done that. But they were taught that you have to eat three meals a day, snacks, and keep fueled, never skip a meal. And all of that was not really true, and it's not really based on anything. Some of our colleagues out there, they're still saying, well, I don't know whether it's really good to skip breakfast. You know, breakfast is bad. And they quote some of the the studies, like it comes out of the American Heart Association. It wasn't a study, it was an observational. Did they actually look at the types of diets? They found out. Oh, the people that are skipping breakfast. Well, yeah, but if you look at their energy.
They're going to McDonald's later, right?
Well, the amount of carbs that they're taking in, their sugar index is very, very high. Well, those are the people that are going to have bad problems. Okay. Yeah. We actually did better as a country when we were doing, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner, no snacks. And so it was basically giving you a 14-hour fasting window. Okay. So if you eat dinner at 6 and you eat breakfast at something like that. So actually we actually did much better. What were you going to say?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to find that. I mean, people have been sending me all week that news headline that 91% increases your heart attack rate by 91% now with intermittent fasting.
I don't
know if you've seen that. It's just,
well, no, I didn't see that, but I did kind of dig up the studies. In fact, I think I even have it on my desk here.
I'm going to try to, let me add to that too. My dad died younger than me. He was a year younger than where I'm at now. And he didn't eat breakfast. So he would, you know, but what was his breakfast? A pot of coffee. And people forget that coffee is a central nervous stimulant. It curbs hunger. So also, how many of these people, okay, they skip breakfast and but look at their whole lifestyle, you know,
right.
Pot of coffee, stressed out, then you go eat junk at lunch. You know, I think just the correlation of reading the article is just misleading.
Well, it's very misleading. And you get a lot of these observational studies that they're horribly set up. And I'm thinking, well, who paid for that? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
The American Heart Association, I mean, they're the ones that put this out, and this was on one of their sites, and it was saying, well, you know, it looks like you might have increased cardiovascular disease.
Right.
Well, that's ridiculous. The American Heart Association, back in 2017, you're familiar with the Pierce study?
No, I'm not.
Okay, it was a 10-year nutritional study. It's looking at fats, carbs, and mortality risk. Okay, so we're trying to keep it simple: fats, carbs, mortality. And so they always said, you know, well, your study wasn't long enough. Well, this is a 10-year long study. Okay, and then they would say, well, your cohort isn't large enough. Okay, well, this was over 138,000 people. Well, it's not diverse enough, bioethnic diverse. Okay, well, this is in 19 countries, 5 continents. Okay, all right, okay. So, and we're trying to keep it simple. Let's just look at fats, carbs, mortality. So the synopsis in the abstract, if you look it up, it'll say, okay, overall mortality was higher in the high carb diet, which is the diet. And fats, specific types of fats, were not associated with increased cardiovascular disease, increased myocardial infarction risk, or increased cardiovascular death. Similar endpoints, but a little different. But they all pointed to, no, there's no correlation. Now, the kicker was the inverse correlation between saturated fat intake, and stroke risk. Mm-hmm. Whoa, that's 180 degrees from what we've been taught.
Hmm.
And, you know, think of the Eskimos, okay? Saturated fat, they have no stroke. Okay, almost done. Okay, well, that was published in The Lancet in November 2017. I was still living over in New Zealand at the time.
Right.
I knew it was coming out. I saw it, and I thought, wow, I already have almost 24 studies on my desk saying the same exact thing, but this is a big study. And the next month in December, the American Heart Association, they put out a press release. We want everyone to know that you need to cut out saturated fat from your diet because it causes stroke risk. Well, excuse me, isn't that what you've been saying for 50 years?
Yeah.
Yes, it is, but it's time that we remind everyone.
Yeah.
Okay. No, you know, they read the study and they want everyone to know. So fast forward to June of the next year in 2018, the International Cardiology Conference over in Germany. I was kind of trolling in there and looking at their chat rooms, and no one wanted to talk about the in the room. The peer study. No one wants to even talk about it. Why? You're going to lose your
license. Yeah.
You're going to lose your tenure. You're going to lose your research. You're going to lose, you know, everything. Okay. No one's going to talk about it. Isn't that a shame?
Yeah. That's right.
Okay. And then you look at the people trying to poke holes in it. And they couldn't.
No, there's no way around it.
Yeah.
We've talked about this before, and I understand it. It is hormones, because a lot of it. But if you're taking in more energy than your body needs, you're going to store it. I mean, so calories, it's not like you can just eat 4,000 calories and, hey, calories don't matter. They actually do matter.
Yeah.
I think, because if you eat too much.
Yeah, absolutely. And as far as the protein goes, I mean, I've had bodybuilders that came in, and I had to tell them, I go, look, you're diabetic. And how can I be diabetic? I don't need any carbs. Okay, well, you know, to start off with, okay, so you're consuming 3 dozen eggs, okay, a day. Okay, just egg whites, okay, but 3 dozen eggs. And then you have 2 big slabs of this meat, okay. And it's huge amounts. You're talking so much protein that it's gluconeogenesis. You're breaking it all down and you're forming glucose. So with the keto diet, you know, if people aren't, you know, they say, I don't understand, you know, I'm down to 20 grams of carbs, but I can't lose any, you know, how come I'm not in ketosis? Well, they're either not taking in enough fat or they're taking in too much protein, because the protein is going to be converted into glucose, gluconeogenesis. Yeah. And so you're going to end up storing it. So interesting. Most people don't do that. But as far as, you know, the how much, as far as, you know, grams per kilo or grams per pound. Yeah. The amount that I was telling you with the very low calorie diet, that is more like about 0.8 grams per kilo, mm-hmm. if I recall right. Yeah. But other people will vary on that. So I'm not fixated on one number. I don't believe in counting calories, but I tell people you may need to do that initially just to figure out, wow, I really am consuming a lot. Wow. Yes. Maybe I should shut that down and decrease my sizes. But I don't want them to fixate on it. But I do tell them, I want you to initially learn the content. If you're buying food that has labels, I go, find out how many grams of carbs you're taking in every day.
Right.
And fats and proteins, but you don't have to keep doing that.
I remember when I got to my highest about, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, I was 230. I'm 6'2", and I was 230. I'm like, I was eating pretty clean. But if you go and you write it down, like, oh man, a cup of cashews, that's like 800 calories. And I think what was getting me is snacks, even healthy snacks. I think if you start to write it down, you realize, oh, I'm like eating way too many calories. So I think it is good. I mean, the bottom line is people, if they need to really lose some weight and get serious, they need to really monitor that caloric intake and make sure it's the right foods, you know,
right.
that we're talking about.
Right. And so I do have patients, you know, after when I first meet them and I go over this, I say, you're going to keep a diary until I see you again.
Okay.
And you're going to tell me how much you eat, what time you eat. What you eat, how much you eat, what time you go to bed, what time you wake up. And that kind of gives me a little something to go with. It's a springboard. So I can discuss, wow, did you know that you could substitute this for that? And why are you eating a snack? Why do you need a snack? Is it out of boredom or are you actually hungry? And okay, well, the boredom, that's another issue dealing with that. But if you're eating nutrient dense foods and you have plenty of the vegetables with fiber, it should carry you through. The more, the higher the amount of nutrients in your food, okay, per calories.
All right. Now we're going to delve into some a few more important topics. Again, I'm here with Dr. Paul Brillhart. You can find his book on Amazon.com, The Lost Art of Fasting in a Gluttonous World. And I know people have a lot of questions for you, but I think the book will answer, you know, a lot of those questions. Right. And I don't know, we've touched on a lot. Yeah. Go ahead. You want to enter?
The other way is through my... my site, drpaulbrillhart.com, and that should link to the page at the store.
Dr. Paul Brillhart, and I think they can see our names on this recording. It'll be in the title. We might even be able to put in YouTube in the description. And again, Dr. Paul does not have an open practice. So as much as I'd like him to take me on too, I know his client list is already full. But you know, so much information, if you go back and you listen to what we've been talking about, and I don't know if you had any additional thoughts, you know, kind of on your mind when we went through, you know, we talked about what diet is best, obviously getting clean, whole foods, clean meat, clean dairy. I mean, it's kind of hard, but even raw dairy to me is ideal because the pasteurization process kills a lot of enzymes. A lot of important nutrients, but I don't know if that's practical for anyone. But maybe on that note, what would you say? You know, watch your calories, whole foods, get active. But what do you do with dairy? That's always been my tough one. If I can't find raw, because you know, organic, but it's, you're just drinking a lot of lactose. You're drinking a lot of sugar water.
No, with the. But the dairy, well, gee, are you drinking milk? Are you eating cheese? Are you doing yogurt or kefir? So absolutely, you need to go organic. That's an absolute. As far as going raw, yeah, that's not practical for most people.
Yeah, I wish it was. I don't have a farm.
Yeah, and then, you know, you get into, you know, problems with the authorities. I mean, they try to...
they do.
They'll try to shut a lot of those operations down. But that's another topic in and of itself. But I try to, I tell people everything in moderation, because there are people that will say absolutely no dairy.
Yeah. And it works good. It works good for some people, you know, do what works best for you.
Yeah. And so I just with that, because like what I said is the peoples around the world that have been, you know, they've been living off of dairy their whole life. And even some of these centenarians, well, they're having some dairy protein in there as well. They're eating cheeses and kefirs and yogurts and things. But, you know, all of those diets vary quite a bit, but it's a very interesting topic. I try to moderation in all, and my gosh, you just feed the body. You put the vehicle in the you drive into the gas station and you're going to put good fuel in. You're not going to just say put whatever in. This vehicle only runs on super unleaded. By the way, don't use the diesel. It's okay, whatever fuel, it doesn't matter. So I try to just focus in on doing away with all the fake food, try to get whole foods, nutrients, and then I try to get them to change their thinking about how they eat. And I tell them, don't be rigid. If you're rigid, you break. Okay. Be flexible. If you want to change lanes, you go from the carb lane to the fat lane or back, or if you want to take a break off the side of the road for a while, get back on the highway and go.
Yeah.
But think of this as a diet. It's a lifestyle.
Yeah.
So again, I tell my patients that I'm a driving instructor. I give driving lessons and this is it. I teach you how your vehicle operates. This is what it is. So if you stay with the basics, stay with the,
in the lane. Yeah.
Okay. Nutrient dense foods. So,
and you mentioned a word, centurion, right? Those who have made
centenarian.
Yeah. They've made it to 100 years old. And I don't know if I think I sent you the video, but I correspond sometimes with Gary Brecka.
Yeah.
He used to be in the insurance industry, and he, you know, they used to be able to pinpoint. He said something that on their study of these people who are 100, every single one of them had high cholesterol.
Yeah, no, that's true. And I mentioned that to someone yesterday. I said, well, you know that the centenarians don't have low cholesterol.
Yeah. And,
well, really? Yeah, that's right. So is it all about cholesterol? No, it's not all about cholesterol. Cholesterol, as we mentioned, is one of the most important molecules
in the body. Yeah, it controls so much.
If you've enjoyed this episode of Eidelman Unplugged, be sure to send us your ideas and topics for future episodes of the podcast. You can send us an email at westsidechristianfellowship.org or shaneeidelman.com. Thank you for listening to us today, and join us again on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to Eidelman Unplugged. For more information, visit us at shaneeidelman.com. Again, that's shaneeidelman.com. El Paseo Publications proudly supports the Westside Christian Fellowship Radio Network. We are committed to quality in Christian publication. Free ebooks can be found at westsidechristianfellowship.org under free ebooks. Books such as What Works for Men and What Works for Young Adults will help readers understand that the obstacles ahead are never greater than God's power to take you through. Books such as What Works When Diets Don't and Feasting and Fasting demonstrate how health can be achieved from a biblical perspective. Other free books such as Answers for a Confused Church and Desperate for More of God show the importance of fully surrendering our lives to Christ. And One Nation Above God is a must read for anyone concerned about the direction of America. Again, free downloads of these ebooks are available at westsidechristianfellowship.org. We are happy about partnering with the Westside Christian Fellowship Radio Network.